This is a Triple J podcast.
The idea of a ticking biological clock is a social pressure that many women feel to fall pregnant by a certain age.
Hello, Dee Salmon with you for the Hookup Podcast, where we talk all things love, sex, dating and relationships. And every Thursday, if you aren't already listening to the pod, we like to delve a bit deeper on a topic. And for the past couple of months, we have been talking a lot about pregnancy, the decision around having kids. We've been talking about miscarriages. And it's all because I realized in the years that I've been doing the Hookup Podcast, this isn't something that we've ever really spoken about. And it's a huge part of sex, right? Like the thing that we're taught in high school or in school in sex education is that, you know, sex can make sometimes people pregnant. And so I thought, let's start the year off by delving into a lot of these topics. And today I wanted to talk about the biological clock and fertility. Something that I've been noticing a lot in my feed recently is a lot of videos talking about the science, the latest science showing that sperm has a lot more to do with fertility than what we've, you know, probably been taught. I don't know about you, but something that I've always kind of thought when it comes to these terms like biological clock and fertility is that it's normally related to women, and it's something that women are constantly told will at some point in your 30s drop off drastically. But now we're learning that this isn't exactly true and that sperm plays a major role in fertility as well. So I thought we'd unpack it with one of our favorite researchers and scientists, Dr. Teresa Larkin, who's an associate professor at the University of Wollongong. Dr. Teresa, thank you so much for coming on the Hookup.
Thanks for having me again. It's nice to be in person again this time.
I know. Now, this was something that you actually wrote about recently in The Conversation. Why has the biological clock normally been related and traditionally linked to women and not men?
Yeah, I did write about it recently. And as you say, there's a lot more about it now. And part of that is just different kinds of research and changes in technology. But definitely when we think of a biological clock and the biological clock ticking, it's always been related to females. So it's been this metaphor used to describe how a woman's fertility decreases over time. Although it's really linked to the fact that the number of eggs that a female has reduces and ultimately goes to nothing at menopause. But this idea is actually really just a social pressure. You know, the idea of a ticking biological clock is a social pressure that many women feel to fall pregnant by a certain age. It actually began in response to women's liberation in the 1970s when the birth rate went down because women were focusing more on their career. And so it actually started out to try and ensure that women were still having enough babies. So it was this real social movement in response to feminism and the female liberation. So, but it would have, I'm sure, been, you know, quite done undercover. But the thing we know is that sperm and numbers and sperm quality also decline in males as they age.
Wow. I had no idea. Mm. So it was almost like a bit of propaganda.
Absolutely. That's the right way to say it. There was a lower birth rate in the 1970s. It was propaganda. You're right. That's the right term.
So if we're thinking about the propaganda of quote unquote a ticking biological clock and reduced fertility, are they both referring to the same thing?
So it's interesting because that's kind of the problem with using emotive terms like biological clock and linking that to fertility, because they're not 100% the same thing. So the biological clock is that metaphor, or as you said, propaganda basically. But fertility is the actual ability, you know, for a sperm to fertilize an egg to implant, that egg to develop into an embryo and a pregnancy and ultimately childbirth. And that's very different to biological clock, which is just linked to age. Whereas we have lots of independent influences. So we have lots of influences on fertility separate to age. But I think it's also important to note that infertility has also been historically mostly or only associated with females, because fertilization and pregnancy occur in the female body. And that's mostly just then been linked to the female age and not to the male age. But actually, statistically, males and females, or eggs and sperm, they contribute equally to infertility. So essentially around a third of cases are due to a male factor, a third are due to a female factor, and the other third are due to a combination. So we now know that the influence is equal for sperm, males, and eggs, females.
I cannot believe that. I cannot believe that. I've spent so much of my life just assuming like, oh, when I get to 35, I'd better, you know, quickly think about having kids. And we'll get into that in a sec about age. But yeah, let's, before we talk about the differences between them both and the contributing factors, let's talk about that age factor, the quote unquote biological clock and what we know about that.
Yeah. So for females, you know, the females are born with around 1 to 2 million eggs in our ovaries, and they gradually reduce over time, very naturally, a gradual decline. So there's around 300,000 at puberty. Again, they continue to naturally decline every month, whether you do or don't take the pill or you're pregnant or not, until there are none at menopause. But the average age of menopause in Australia is 51. And so I think even that, we sort of seem a bit scared sometimes thinking that it's, you know, 40, that we've got no eggs left. 51 is the average age, but it can vary, you know, from a few years earlier than that to a few years later. The other thing with the biological clock in females is that the longer an egg sits in the ovaries, it is true that it's got a greater chance of having a genetic abnormality, and that can lead to miscarriage or a genetic disease, for example. And so it's always been known that eggs have more chromosomal abnormalities than sperm, but this research has been done using eggs from females who are infertile, and we also haven't been able to really assess chromosomes and chromosome abnormalities in sperm very easily because the sperm is so tiny, the chromosomes are so tiny, there hasn't been the technology. So that's how numbers change in females. But when we think about males, it's actually really similar. So although sperm are produced continuously from puberty throughout life, the numbers also start to decline naturally from around age 20, you know, until around age 50. And so at around age 50 to 55 for a male, average sperm numbers are actually lower than the limits associated with fertility set by the World Health Organization. So that's very similar to the menopausal average age of 51, where we're saying the numbers of eggs are below the limits of fertility because there are none left. And in this case, the number of sperm are below the levels for fertility because we need a number of sperm to make it to the egg, which we'll come back to. And actually now there is this term called andropause, linking that to menopause. And that's essentially highlighting that males do have reduced testosterone in the same way that females' hormones reduce. And again, that's a similar time frame to the ages of perimenopause. So basically from the 40s, to then the late 40s and into the 50s, males experience hormonal and physiological changes to do with lowered testosterone, lowered sperm production, similarly to how females go through perimenopause.
Okay, this needs to be spoken about so much more. I've never heard of that before at all.
Yeah, yeah, I do like that. Yeah, andropause.
So, andropause.
Yeah, sort of meaning male pause, which is hilarious, don't you think, that it's menopause for women anyway?
Yeah.
It's like, it's crazy.
What does the meno mean?
Monthly.
Okay.
So yeah, pausing of that monthly cycle.
What about the quality? You said that it's hard to be able to tell because the sperm is so small, but do we assume that there is as well a decline in quality genetics-wise as with sperm as well as eggs?
Yeah, so this is something else where recent research has really added to our knowledge. And interesting, there was just a study published in Nature towards the end of last year, October, I think. And so Nature's obviously, you know, massively important publication journal. And that was in males aged 24 to 75 years, so the spectrum of age. And they found that sperm accumulate more DNA mutations, so mutations in our DNA, in our genetics, than previously thought. And there is a lot more data out there now showing that there are actually, though there are still, we think there's more chromosomal changes in eggs versus sperm, and that's related to them sitting in the ovaries longer. The data now shows that mutations in the DNA, so in the actual genetics, so chromosomes are still genetics, but they're the bigger, they what carry our genes. They think that there's more abnormalities in the DNA in sperm than eggs. And that's because different to eggs, sperm being constantly produced means that every time those cells divide and replicate, there's a chance for error. And so because they're dividing and replicating throughout life, they actually have an accumulating chance of error, which means that similarly, as a male ages and those sperm have gone through so many more mutations, or sorry, so many more cell cycles, because every time we have the sperm, some more are developed every day. Some of those can be released in an ejaculation, but some will always stay as a base population to make more the next day. So we still have the base population of sperm that have been there since birth.
That are reproducing more sperm.
Yeah, reproducing from puberty onwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the more that they're, so it's essentially like they could tire out, you know, they're not reproducing as well, they're not replicating as well, and we can have mistakes happen which can cause abnormalities in the DNA.
How do male and female biological clocks link to fertility?
There's a few different ways. So firstly, really about numbers. So we still need one egg and one sperm to have a fertilisation. So the decline in numbers with age in both females and males, and that's linked to our concept of a biological clock, that definitely does affect fertility. With sperm, even though we know that there's multiple sperm, you know, millions of sperm in an ejaculate, and we only need one. And so that gives us sort of this false sense of security in a way. Like there's so many of them, whereas the critical thing with an egg is that only one is ovulated a month and there's only a few days of a fertile period. But the sperm still have their challenges. So we need enough sperm numbers and we need enough sperm volumes and secretions to get them to the egg. So the sperm have that different need. So they have a different function essentially. So the sperm need to be alive, but we know that the number of sperm that are alive reduces with age. They need to have good mobility, which is their movement or their swimming ability. They need to be the correct shape and not have any morphological or structural changes so that they can reach and fertilize an egg. So yeah, we've got those additional factors for sperm. We need an adequate volume, so the sperm and the seminal fluids, because those seminal fluids provide nourishment to the sperm. So yeah, it's all of these things. And then in addition, the genetic damage that can increase with age in both eggs and sperm can also contribute to fertility.
And what about miscarriages? Because something that I've noticed a lot in my feed, a video is going viral talking about how sperm plays actually a huge part with pregnancy when it comes to, I guess, the health and how the partner carrying the baby, potential baby, is feeling. So whether that's like vomit, lots of morning sickness and vomiting, or, you know, feeling really, really unwell, or even leading to miscarriage. And I've been seeing that in my feed. It's saying a lot of people didn't realize, but sperm, the health of sperm plays a major part in that.
Absolutely. Some of those that I've seen as well have got some untruths in them, saying that it's only the male that contributes to morning sickness, things like that. That's not true. But absolutely, the contribution to miscarriage is equal with by eggs and by sperm. And one of the things that's come out in research is that it's actually the sperm that's more likely linked to recurrent miscarriage. So it's again one of those things where we think about implantation, you know, is obviously such an essential aspect for a pregnancy. But miscarriage can be due to those genetic defects and they're in the eggs and in the sperm. Obviously not everybody, we have, but there's likelihoods. So it's equal from the egg and the sperm. Implantation can be affected by egg and sperm as well. But miscarriage, there's definitely female factors and definitely male factors.
What sort of ages are we talking for males and females linked to lower fertility? Because like I said before, the story has always been for women, or people with uteruses, that at 35, huge drop-off. And I think you even get called geriatric, right? It's a geriatric pregnancy after 35. What do we know now?
It's so terrible, isn't it? Luckily, that term is slowly getting changed to that advanced maternal age, which is so much better. Geriatric should not be anywhere near it.
Unless you're 90 years exactly. old, I don't want to hear 100%. That term being used for anything.
No, exactly. And it's awful that it's, again, it's only ever linked to the female's age. You know, what about when the male partner is 50-something and no label is given to the sperm owner? So, yeah, absolutely. The sort of ages that we're talking about, again, it's really good that we have more information about this. And this is one of the biggest changes to how we can look at the data and to change some misconceptions. Because again, historically, few studies ever considered the impact of the male's age. And even now, there are websites online that will graph fertility rates according to women's ages, but actually they're graphing birth rates. And even just that misrepresentation of data, it sort of has this, there's a motive aspect to fertility that's different to birth rates. But just as an example, there was a study of 40 million births across a decade in the USA, and they found that the father's age of 45 or older definitely affected many different antenatal outcomes independent of the mother's age. But the reason I wanted to also highlight that study is that it shows us how data can be skewed. So they decided to look at males older than 45 versus younger than 45. But in a lot of studies on females, they choose a cut point of older than 35 versus younger than 35. And that makes us think that 35 is the magic age for females. And for example, from this particular study, that 45 is a magic a number or age for males. And that's not true. So some of our data has really been skewed by specific studies that group certain age groups together. But overall, we know that from around age 30, the number of sperm with good motility, that are alive, with correct shape, the semen volume, all of that reduces. So it's a similar time frame to what we think of for females. So basically those changes really reduce fairly steadily. Some studies have also shown this increased risk of infertility from around 35 in males, but again, it depends on how that study was conducted. But absolutely, so there's age-dependent decline in sperm and semen affecting male fertility, things like the time it takes to conceive, the chance of falling pregnant, and rates of miscarriage. So all of those things are slowly increasing as we age from 20s to 30s to 40s to 50.
Would you say it's equal?
From what I've looked at, it's very similar. It's very similar, although I have to say overall, males do still have a longer period. So more into, say, when they're 55, they've still got a higher chance in general than a female at that age. But looking at some of the studies, for example, you know, and these are studies of more than 2,000 couples, one showed that men older than 45, but again, they've used that as a cutoff, took five times longer to conceive than men younger than 25. There was a 20% lower chance of falling pregnant within a year. And in terms of miscarriage, there's around a 30% higher chance of miscarriage in men older than 40 compared to those in their 20s.
It's so good we're having this conversation because, like you said, for so long, it has just been about eggs and female fertility. For someone who is looking at getting pregnant, and we want to consider that both the egg and the sperm is just as equally invaluable and the health of both of them, how can someone keep their sperm healthy?
This is a good question, and it really highlights that it's not just age for a male and their sperm or a female and their eggs, because so many environmental and lifestyle factors affect our general health, which definitely affects those cells in our body as well. In terms of sperm production, oxidative stress is one of the main negative influences. So oxidative stress is when we have too many damaging chemicals in our body and not enough antioxidants. So that is known to disrupt sperm production. It increases the sperm DNA damage, and it is strongly linked to male infertility. So anything that can be done to reduce oxidative stress is the best thing that someone can do. So that's really able to be done by lifestyle factors. So, you know, not smoking, not too much alcohol, not illicit drugs, not too much processed meat, sugar, being active, eating fruits and vegetables, you know, all the colours of the rainbow, all of that stuff, socialising, lowered stress, all of those things, and avoiding excess pollutants where that's possible. So excess, you know, heavy metals, pesticides, chemicals, things like that.
I've read somewhere that this should be, you know, something that you're considering lifestyle-wise for both people around 9 months in advance, 6 months in advance. How far ahead of falling pregnant, if this is something that you're wanting to do, should you start looking after sperm health?
Definitely 3 to 6 months minimum, because the sperm are developing in there. They take around 2 to 3 months to become fully functional. So that means in an ejaculate, there's likely to be sperm there that are 3 months old, basically, since they've been starting to develop. So the recommendation is sort of at least 6 months, because that gives you time to make those changes and reduce oxidative stress to set up a really antioxidant environment, a healthy environment at the time when the new sperm are being developed. So yeah, 9 months even is ideal, because then you're in those good habits and you've got a really healthy, as healthy a body as you can.
Again, this is a conversation that has always been centered around the person who's carrying the baby, right?
Yep.
Like, it's always like, take your vitamins, your prenatal vitamins, don't eat this, don't do that, for months on end. And the guy's out having a bender. Talking about friends that I know. Do you know what I mean? It's like the guy's out just having a bender all weekend and she's there popping her folate.
And you know what? It's such a good point, because the folate, for example, is protective of once there's an embryo developing and the development. But yeah, if the sperm that's potentially going to make that embryo is not good, it's not healthy, then there's not going to be potentially a fertilization or an implantation or a pregnancy. So absolutely. And because honestly, that oxidative stress is really highly linked, and they know that, this is kind of then a nice opportunity to think, I can do as much as I can to try and set up the healthiest environment for my sperm.
There's so many things that can affect fertility, which we're not going to get into, because there's so many and we basically just want to focus on, you know, biological clock and that kind of thing. But when should someone seek help for fertility issues, and how do people get tested?
Yeah, so they normally say if you've been trying to fall pregnant for a year. Interestingly, in one of the studies I read, the timing of when someone had sex and aligning that with a fertile period was the number one influence on on time to pregnancy. So that's something that's really important for again, both parties to know, for everyone to know when is the optimal time.
As in ovulation?
Yeah, before ovulation. So in those few days before ovulation. And so, yeah, normally they say if you've been trying, you know, unprotected sex, trying to conceive for a year, then you should seek help. The interesting thing is that, you know, traditionally the female's been the first to be tested, and has had many females would have undergone a lot of different treatments, you know, laparoscopies, blood tests, concern that it's them. There's actually new guidelines out now for GPs in Australia on testing for when a couple presents with fertility issues. And it's actually mandatory now that in a heterosexual couple, the male and the female get tested straight away. So they both get tested. So that's actually really good. And for the male, you know, in addition to things like blood tests, you know, analysis, things like that, there'll also be examination of the penis, the scrotum, the testes. So really good to think that for, you know, it's 1 in 6 to 1 in 9 Australian heterosexual couples will undergo fertility issues or concerns. It's great to know that with the female and the male getting tested both straight away first, it'll really cut down the time before answers are found, and then the couple can consider and understand what options they have or treatments.
So overall, should we be concerned about our biological clocks or infertility? I feel like it's obviously a really important conversation, but I feel like it is over-exaggerated, at least in my mind. I feel like, especially as I've gotten older, so many more conversations seem to be happening, and I'm getting constant advice from people being like, don't leave it too late. Like, even my GP said that to me last year, and I'm like fresh 30s, you know what I mean? So I just am like, oh, wow, this is definitely, as soon as I hit that age, everyone started having that conversation with me. Should we be as concerned as what people are making it out to be?
I do think overall we have to remember that it is really individualized for every person, and that some people will just have infertility issues regardless of whether they tried to fall pregnant at 19 or 39. And I think sometimes that can, you know, and that's awful for people who want to be pregnant and can't be, and it's independent of themselves, their health, their age. Some people will just have that. In terms of the data, there does seem to be a sweet age range that's actually late 20s to sort of through the early 30s, because the data about miscarriages and fertility and things like that is actually not that good for people under 20. It's sort of similar under 20 to what it gets to in the 40s. So there's this sweet sort of period of age where statistically it's optimal, but they're just statistics. And we all know people who have had babies as females and males in the 40s, even 50s. It also is that less people are trying to have babies, you know, as you get into your 40s and older. I'm not saying we shouldn't at all. I'm just saying naturally, it's just the way of the world, you know, less people are. And so again, I think the data can be skewed. What I think overall is that some people will have fertility issues regardless of age. And for other people, age just won't matter. And you know, it just really is, it's probability every single time someone tries to fall pregnant. So I think the best thing is that we look after our overall health. You know, we do all those things that we know are for our best health. And I think it's important to know that most pregnancies in Australia are normal and most babies are healthy regardless of age. So I think the biggest thing is that it's easier said than done, but chronic stress can reduce fertility in males and females. So less stress about the biological clock could also probably help it. Of course, keeping in mind that people still should seek help if they can't get pregnant after a year. But I think that the time that someone feels is right for them, I don't think they should feel pressured to do that any sooner or later. Obviously, taking into account, you know, specific doctor's advice.
Yeah, and just on miscarriages, we did do a whole episode on this. We did two huge episodes recently about miscarriages. And one of the takeaways was they are so common, right? That's like somewhere between 1 in 4 and 1 in 10, depending on certain factors and age and that kind of thing. But yeah, it didn't mean that people then went on to have healthy pregnancies. It's just something that we, again, don't talk about. It's something that is kind of taboo when it is so common to experience a miscarriage. But like you said, Teresa, it's great to hear that generally, on average, in Australia, most people have healthy pregnancies and the fact that that happens at all different ages.
That's right. I do think that's our takeaway, that on an individual basis, you know, some people will not have the pregnancies they want and some people will have pregnancies that they didn't plan. But absolutely, like for people who are trying, that overall most pregnancies are normal and most babies are healthy in Australia.
Oh my gosh, there's so much that, like, this is such a big topic. There's so much that we could have delved into as well further around other things, like I said, that impact fertility. But yeah, great to be able to talk about and unpack the whole biological clock thing and some of the kind of misinformation around that. So thank you so much.
Thank you.